It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRX. I'm Doug Gordon, sitting in for Anne Strainchamps. Today, who needs critics?
I left my hometown of Seattle and moved to San Francisco when I was 19.
Music critic Ann Powers.
Train arrived. 16 coaches long
for. Sometime around that time, I found a book, and it was called Mystery Train by the writer Greil Marcus. And I read it, and something opened up. It had become a key that unlocked a door. It showed me that I could go to deep places while focusing on the music I loved. I was an undergraduate at San Francisco State at the time, and I so loved this book that I actually did a project. I was looking at Elvis Presley and thinking about how his story was connected to the ancient tale of Dionysus, the god of excess and transformation. I wrote this paper. I think I got an A, whatever, but I actually put it in a manila envelope with a mixtape I'd made of Elvis songs that I thought proved my theory. Well, I was too embarrassed. I never sent it. I did later meet Greil, and over the years we've become great friends, but I still haven't given him that envelope. Some revelations are best kept to oneself.
That's NPR Music's critic and author Ann Powers. We'll hear more from her in a moment. Today, we're rethinking reviewing. Mark Greif, one of the founders of the literary magazine N+1, will join us. And we'll also hear from our favorite pop culture philosopher, Chuck Klosterman. But first, is cultural criticism on the verge of extinction? Newspapers have laid off their theater and film critics, at least partly because blogs, websites, Facebook, and Twitter allow readers to bypass the gatekeepers and publish their own opinions unfiltered, whether lengthy and measured or emotional and studded with emoji. So if everyone's a critic online, does it mean that cultural criticism doesn't matter anymore? Ann Powers is the perfect person to ask. She's NPR Music's critic and correspondent, and she's the author of several books. Her latest is Good Booty: Love and Sex, Black and White, Body and Soul in American Music. Ann does make a few allusions to sexuality in this conversation, which may not be suitable for our younger or sensitive listeners. Ann, why does cultural criticism matter?
Today I was reading an essay by Chris Wallace, who used to be the executive editor of Interview Magazine. He just wrote a piece for The All about why he left that job, in which he says there's no need for celebrity profiles anymore. There's really no need for celebrity journalism. Famous people are truly just like us now. They tweet, they are on Facebook, you can interface with them or with the person they've hired to pretend they're them at any time. Wallace concludes that what remains important is criticism, because criticism provides context. It pulls us back from that immediate experience of encountering a famous person or encountering a work, and makes us think about how that work fits in the world, fits in history, fits in our sort of psychology, our shared psyche. I always consider myself as a cultural critic to be like a friend who's having a conversation with my reader about something we both take very seriously, but which neither of us completely understands. So it's a dialogue with my reader to try to live better in the world, this world that I love the most, which is the world of arts and expression, to live in a way that sees the ethics of it, the moral side of it, the aesthetics of it, all of those things clearly and with great understanding that comes from a long time looking at other works and thinking about how they connect. Cultural criticism is connection, and connection is one thing that the kind of stripped down apparatus of social media, ironically, can't give us that kind of insightful connection rather than just a blank one.
Yeah. So let's talk about your new book, Good Booty. When you talk about love and sex, you're not just talking about pleasure, are you?
Oh, absolutely not. Associated with eroticism are more difficult to handle emotions and urges, yearning, heartbreak, sorrow, rage. Those all manifest too. Think of the blues, you know. The blues can be fun and brassy. You know, 1920s blues queens can sing funny songs like Bessie Smith's, you know, I Want a Little Hot Dog in My Roll. But at the same time, Bessie Smith and the blues queens would sing about absolute abjection, you know, and loving their man, even if their man is violent, being completely bereft because they've been left behind.
Borrow from an idea from Martin Luther King Jr., his notion of somebodyness?
Very, very central idea to me in my life as well as in this book. So Martin Luther King's idea of somebodyness is that part of ourselves that lives within ourselves, no matter how violated or oppressed we are. It is the spark of life. Audre Lorde, in her essay about the power of the erotic, would say that that is eroticism. It is not only joy, and it's not exactly identity, it's resilience. Maybe that's a good word for it.
Yeah.
It's a thing we need to keep alive. It's a thing we fight to keep alive within ourselves. And I really believe that music nurtures somebodyness. Why is it when you feel super down and defeated, you want to go listen to your favorite music? Because it brings that back up in yourself. And people share music to nurture each other's somebodiness. You can see the beauty in someone when you're dancing next to them at a Prince concert, or you could, may he rest in peace. That is what music gives us, because it is an active engagement we have with music in a different way than any other art form, I think. It births this quality within ourselves.
When I think about sex in American popular music, one of the first artists that comes to my mind is Madonna. You say that Madonna was not only a superstar, but that she was the defining spirit of mainstream America's erotic redefinitions. What do you mean by that?
In the 80s, when Madonna came up, America was dealing with a terrible crisis, the HIV/AIDS epidemic. And that really changed the way that people thought about sex, how they engaged in sex. You know, there was a lot of fear around it. At the very same moment, women are continuing on their feminist journey to establish power in the world in different ways. And Madonna embodied that figure of someone who is feeling empowered to be independent, but also realizing she's walking into a danger zone. Secondly, she identified super strongly with the gay community and could carry the message of like how to live an erotic life in the age of AIDS forth to the mainstream. And then the third factor is a technological one, which is MTV was just coming into power. And she created this visual fantasy world that was equally important to her music, just as a generation is having to recreate their own fantasies and, you know, live through screen fantasies, partly because of the fear of AIDS.
Mm-hmm. Is there a particular Madonna song that you would point to as her most culturally significant one?
This week.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that song is Express Yourself. I was listening to Like a Prayer recently, my favorite Madonna album, and that song, Express Yourself, which is a club banger, just a great example of what was being heard in gay clubs in the 80s and all clubs in the 80s. I love that song because it really is an anthem of empowerment that can work for so many different people.
Mm-hmm.
it works for a woman who, you know, is seeking respect from a man. It worked for the gay community at that time, who was being marginalized and demonized because of HIV/AIDS. It works for people of color to demand equality. It's just an awesome anthem, and I think it is a huge achievement.
And then there's Madonna's main rival during the 80s, Prince. And you say that Prince reconnected the dots between Little Richard and glam rock to enact a sly critique of heterosexuality. Can you unpack that for me?
Here's this African-American guy from Minneapolis who is playing rock, but with a funk bottom that's just as strong as the rock guitars on top. Very influenced by New Wave, very influenced by art music, but still like super funky. And the stories he's telling through this blend are fascinating fantasy stories, often about sexual encounters or romantic encounters, where he just keeps flipping the script. Think of Little Red Corvette, or think of Raspberry Beret, or even Darling Nikki, which at the time was, you know, a scandalous song about a woman masturbating that got a lot of people up in arms to censor music. In each of these songs, Prince is presenting what's kind of like a porn scenario at the beginning, but then he shifts the power.
Right.
The woman is the one with the power, and the woman is the one with the mystery, and the one who sort of leaves him a little bit in the dust. The critic Touré wrote a book about Prince, and he talks about how porn influenced Prince's writing. I think what's interesting to take Touré's argument a step further is this rewriting of the porn scenario where the woman is not the object, but the subject. That has nothing to do with what Prince was like in his personal life. I don't know too much about that. I think that's why so many women especially feel empowered when they listen to Prince.
That would make perfect sense, yeah. And that's something I never thought about. Is there a definitive Prince song that you think really captures his contributions to the erotic history of American popular music?
My goodness. Ah, how can I choose? Probably When Doves Cry is the one I usually go to, because the sound of that song is very unusual, and someone wrote an essay about how it sort of mirrors the female orgasm, because it doesn't come to like a single climax, it's just a circular sound. And I think it's a great marriage of lyric that's very deep and sexy, and also this sound that creates a different feeling in your body, you know, than most music does.
Beyoncé comes along in the early 2000s, and she's very savvy in terms of the way she used emerging digital technologies to market herself and her music, right?
Yeah, Beyoncé is the pop star of our time. She's the Aretha of the cyber age. It's remarkable how she has charted her career from her teenage days in Destiny's Child to her present day as really the most powerful woman, maybe in all of American entertainment. And she's done that in part by creating a realm for herself that is a private realm that she discloses in pieces via social media. You know, she doesn't really give interviews, but she'll use Instagram, or at one point she was using Tumblr, whatever tool there is at the moment. Beyoncé really created her masterpiece so far with the album Lemonade. And I think the lead single off Lemonade, Formation, just has everything that she has to offer. It's sexy, it's political, it borrows from interesting sources, including New Orleans bounce music, and yet it's totally, unmistakably Beyoncé. It became a huge anthem and remains one of the best singles of the past few years, Formation. My daddy Alabama, mama Louisiana. You mix that Negro with that Creole, make a Texas Bama. I like my baby hair with baby hair and afro. I like my Negro nose with that.
played on the radio station. I might get your song played on the radio station.
One of the most impressive things you do in Good Booty is to demonstrate that eroticism is a force that has helped people, especially marginalized people, sustain themselves in the face of terrible treatment throughout the history of the United States. Can you talk a bit about that?
I think there's a habit of thinking among music fans and sometimes music writers to equate, especially African-American music, with a kind of honesty that can be reduced to primitivism. And I think that's completely wrong. I'm not saying rock and roll's raw essence comes from people of color because they're more in touch with their bodies. That's a racist thing to say, and yeah. That's not what I'm saying.
No.
What I am saying is that when people were brought to this country via the Middle Passage, through the African diaspora into oppression, they came with their somebody-ness intact, their cultures intact, different cultures, right?
Mm-hmm.
From throughout Africa and the Caribbean. There's a Latin influence as well in here and a Native American influence. And these marginalized people communicated deep truths to each other and to themselves through music. And that connection between music and the erotic is also a connection to these deepest stories. Music became a way of speaking the unspeakable in America because it always was a way of speaking the unspeakable, forgotten stories of people who were dehumanized. And so we're talking about this broader definition of the erotic, but because for other reasons, having to do with certain kinds of religious and legal repression, it was very hard to talk about sex. Music also became a way to talk about sex. Music became the repository of the things we absolutely need to face that we just don't know how to face when we're just speaking to each other. You
Ann Powers is the author of Good Booty, Love and Sex, Black and White, Body and Soul in American Music. She's also NPR Music's critic and correspondent.